This is All In. I'm Jill Sheridan. Today we're talking about winter plans to help people experiencing homelessness and how organizations around Indiana have had to change operations this past year because of the pandemic. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give us your name and where you're calling from, a quick question or a comment, and we'll do our best to get into the conversation. Again, that's 866-476-3881. You can also send us a high-quality voice message with our smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. And we're joined now by two guests for this hour. Chelsea Herring-Cozy is Executive Director of the Coalition for Homelessness Intervention and Prevention, or CHIP. Thanks, Chelsea, for being here.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
And Jennifer Layton, President and CEO of LTHC, Homeless Services in Lafayette. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Jill. Thank you.
Yes, thank you both again so much. Important work that's going on this season, especially broadly looking at, you know, the work that you do. I'd like each of you to sort of tell the people that might not be familiar. You know, first, Chelsea, you know, what's the work that you do with CHIP here in Indianapolis?
Sure. Thanks, Jill. So CHIP is the Coalition for Homelessness Intervention and Prevention. And we are not a direct service provider, meaning we are not directly working with individuals or households experiencing homelessness, but we're working with the whole continuum of service providers working in this space. And what that work means is we are working collectively to make sure that we are moving forward the strategies of our Indianapolis Community Plan to end homelessness, that we're working collectively to optimize crisis response system, to reduce the length of time people spend homeless, to continue to invest in and build more supportive housing and affordable housing, to enhance social services, to support those experiencing homelessness, navigate the process and to support them once housed, and to continue, again, to move away from just managing homelessness to really ending it through long-term solutions. So CHIP is kind of serving as the backbone agency, making sure we all remain focused on solutions. We do advocacy and we do, again, a lot of convening of stakeholders and partners to make sure that, again, we focus on long-term permanent solutions for those experiencing homelessness here in Indianapolis.
And, you know, this community is lucky to have the work that you do be so coordinated because there's a lot of moving parts, we know. So, again, thanks for being here. Jennifer, if you could tell us the work that you do at LTHC in Lafayette.
Absolutely. So LTHC, we actually, our formal legal name is Lafayette Transitional Housing Center, but not many people understand really what that looks like. So we do business as LTHC Homeless Services. And we are a nonprofit direct service provider. So we've been around for over 30 years. And our intent and mission is to provide services and housing resources to people who are experiencing homelessness. We help families, we help individuals, we help veterans. Doesn't matter who people are, we are the place, the one-stop shop location where people who have a severe housing crisis are able to come and get their needs met. So we do what's called coordinated entry, where we provide an intake and assessment for all people that are in a housing crisis, and we help them navigate the system and help them figure out exactly what resources they could be eligible for. We do a lot of work in the space of prevention and diversion, so we keep people out of the homeless system. If people are actually staying with friends or family, or maybe they have rental housing, but they are behind in their rent, we help them connect the dots so that they don't actually enter the system, keep them in their housing. Again, like Chelsea said, we're not here to bring more people into the system and manage homelessness. We're here to keep people out. And so the coordinated entry system is actually what does that. And so people that are experiencing homelessness, then they are prioritized in what we call our coordinated entry prioritization lists. And so we really focus on helping the people that are the most vulnerable. We have a day resource center, so we are providing meals and showers and laundry services. We've got an employment center, we've got a healthcare navigator, and we have housing stability caseworkers all working to help people with their individualized housing plan. But then we also have a night shelter. We have an emergency crisis shelter, medical respite beds, and an interim housing program. So we're open 24/7. We also have a program that is rapid rehousing. And so that's where we actually partner with local landlords to provide financial assistance and case management to families, individuals, and veterans. And we also are a housing provider because there is a way to end homelessness, and that's with housing. And so we have 99 units of what's called permanent supportive housing. And that's a housing solution for people that really have the most barriers and challenges to their housing stability. And so those folks live with us at in our housing.
Mm-hmm. You know, when the pandemic hit, I just remember, you know, there was really an urgency about making sure that people experiencing homelessness were going to have the right resources in place, that we were going to be able to do the right things at the shelter. And it was a unique challenge, I remember. And operations obviously had to shift. Chelsea, can you talk a little bit about, you know, the major changes that you saw with COVID-19?
Sure, Jill. I mean, I think COVID-19, if it did anything, it just reinforced and made us all so acutely aware of housing as a health response. It has never been, I think, more evident than this past year with COVID-19 that housing is truly a public health response. It's really hard when the pandemic hit and all of us were told we should be staying home and isolating and quarantine. It's really hard to do that when you don't have a home. It's really hard to do that when you're living in congregate shelter environments or living unsheltered in encampments, to be able to adhere to all the guidance we were all getting when COVID hit. And so it really caused us to have to say, one, we need to quickly come together and figure out how we do everything possible to make sure those who are living unhoused right now have some safe options to stay healthy and to be able to adhere to CDC guidance and to help our shelter partners do the same. Shelters did not want to see outbreaks either. So one of the first things that we really had to do was really rethink shelter and move to more non-congregate sheltering options. So people had private safe places to be, to recover, to heal. And so we worked really closely with our shelter partners, the state Department of Social Services, and our Marion County Health Department to set up hotel sites that could serve as emergency shelters, but provide private spaces for those who were specifically in high-risk categories, to set up hotel sites that were serving as quarantine and isolation sites for people experiencing homelessness who were COVID positive, that needed safe places to quarantine and recover. So that was one of the first things we had to pivot. We had to rethink the way sheltering happened and to do it in a way that provided safe spaces for people to come and to do it in a way that was dignified and compassionate. And most importantly, where we are now, Jill, is a pathway to housing. People cannot go back to congregate settings. We don't want people going back living unsheltered. We want people to go into housing. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the first kind of biggest things that we did as a community to respond, is to provide different ways of sheltering that lead to housing. Mm-hmm. The other is for those living unsheltered. We really had to work closely with outreach teams to pivot and make sure people were getting connected, getting some of their basic needs met and health needs met, getting information about screening and testing and where they could go to have safe places, to support hygiene. It's really hard to support, again, CDC guidance when you're living unsheltered and have no access to bathrooms or to hand washing stations. So we had to work really closely with city and health department to get those set up. And more importantly, again, to start talking about safer ways for people to engage and get connected to housing and resources.
Right. Jennifer, did you see some of those same solutions come into play in Lafayette?
We absolutely did, Jill. And I will just say that here in Lafayette, we actually opened a brand new location in January of 2020 on Martin Luther King Day. And when we did that, our goal was to create a one-stop shop location that was open 24/7 to provide a congregate setting for people who are experiencing homelessness to have all their needs met under one roof. Little did we know that to the middle of March, everything would change on a dime. So I heard Chelsea say the word pivot a couple times. I've never pivoted so much in my life. And so, but I will say that it was really great to actually have this new location and the space and the flexibility, because that's really what we did, was we remained flexible. The things that we thought we knew prior to the middle of March were not what happened, you know? And so we were able to make really significant changes, all with the safety of our guests at the forefront of those decisions that we were making. And so we absolutely did partner with all of our, we have another emergency shelter. Our local health department is fantastic and prioritizes our folks that are experiencing homelessness. And so we were able to really look at the vulnerability of some of the people that we had in congregate shelter and determine who really, based on their age and other types of that kind of COVID criteria, who can we get out of here? Because there's a lot of, we really needed to focus on desegregating. Because again, we've got a lot of people that are all under one roof. I mean, we were serving 130 people a day in a location that right now we're down to around 85, because we really are focusing on getting people to stay with friends or family, getting people into housing. But then there's the state sustainability challenge. I mean, there's so many challenges that we're all coming down the pipe at the same time. But again, we were quickly able to, because of friends from our local United Way, we got some additional federal resources. We were able to quickly get people into those hotels in order to keep them safe and out of here. But then, like Chelsea mentioned, we didn't want them back. Like, don't be coming back here. Like, we need to find a long-term solution and a housing plan. And so then there's that additional work as well. So we had some folks that were in hotels for weeks on end while we were partnering with local landlords to try to find those long-term solutions. So it was a lot. It was a lot. And you know, none of us had this on the radar. Like, right. This wasn't one of those things that we planned for. I've been here 26 years. Who heard of this before? Well, not us.
All so. Been through. Yeah, it is a lot. I think that's the understatement. And we're going to discuss all those things, you know, the federal funding, I know, was huge here with the work that you're doing. We will be back with our guests after a quick break, talking today about moves to help people experiencing homelessness during the winter and during the pandemic. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Jill Sheridan, back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Jill Sheridan. We're talking today about homelessness during the winter and during the pandemic. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message using your free smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store and send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it onto the show. And joined now by our guests for the hour, Chelsea Herring-Cozy, Executive Director for the Coalition for Homelessness Intervention and Prevention, or CHIP, and Jennifer Layton, President and CEO of LTHC Homeless Services out of Lafayette. So back to the discussion now. I know we were talking so much about how everything changed this past year with the work that you do, and we know that the winter has brought special challenges. You know, communities put in place winter contingency plans, they're called, for what shifts in Indiana during the winter. Can you talk about the special challenges that you've seen with winter contingency plans this year, Chelsea?
Sure. You know, again, this, we do winter contingency planning every year, but with the pandemic, it really challenged us to think differently about winter contingency and making sure, particularly during the very unpredictable winter months here in Indiana, there are places for people to come inside and to safely shelter while getting connected to resources and housing. And so what we were able to do this year in close partnership with our largest shelter partners who've had to reduce their capacity by almost half in some cases to continue to adhere to public health guidance, is to say, how do we build off of what we've already put in place in the COVID-19 response through hoteling options, and to really make sure that we have enough space for those who need to come inside to come inside, and to do it in a way that is maybe a little more low barrier than we're usually even able to do. And so we, through Winter Contingency and our partnership with Wheeler, who coordinates here in Indianapolis Winter Contingency, we're able to set up two additional hotel sites for the winter months specifically, to allow the shelters to keep their congregate numbers lower and to provide safe spaces. And what I'm really most excited about this year is what that's meant for families, specifically, is having private hotel options to support our family shelters has allowed us to kind of rethink family structures and how families can come in together and stay together, which has not always been the case here in Indianapolis in the way our family shelters are set up. You know, we've really just taken what we've learned from COVID and expanded that in how we've reimagined Winter Contingency. And what that's allowed for, I think, is more access to emergency shelter in these winter months, and a way to connect with more people on permanent solutions. That's what we're doing here in Indianapolis in close partnership with our shelters, who are continuing to be committed to reducing congregate shelter numbers and reimagining ways we do this.
Jennifer, you mentioned that you had also used the hotel model in Lafayette. Are you still using that same model? And what has winter contingency looked like for you this year?
So, yes, similar to what Chelsea mentioned, we use the hotel model right now specifically for homeless families with children. We have one emergency shelter that is specifically for families, and because of COVID, they have had to reduce the number of families that they've been able to serve. And because we were able to receive some additional funding, we do have financial resources that allow us to provide for emergency shelter in one of our local hotels. So that's been a real blessing for us. And I think that's been one of those things that, because of COVID, people are more aware about homelessness and that it's not okay. And so we really do need to find a safe place for people to go. As far as our individuals, our normal winter contingency plan has remained where we've been able to have. We do have another local emergency shelter, and so they have a very low barrier. We call it the Winter Warming Center. And so it's able to open for people that maybe don't qualify for an emergency shelter, where they're able to go and be safe. And we also have an overflow back at LTHC here at our location, because with our emergency shelter and interim housing, when those are at capacity, we do have another opportunity to make sure people are still safe with the social distancing guidelines that we all have in play. That really does make a huge difference, because we're so used to kind of shoving everybody in and utilizing bunk beds and keeping lots of people in small rooms in order to just make sure people have beds. Well, we've had to spread all of those things out and try to deconcentrate, like I mentioned. And so, but we do have opportunities for shelter to make sure everyone is safe this winter.
Chelsea, I know that recently here in Indianapolis, you're undergoing the point in time count, and that lets us know a good idea of, you know, how many people are experiencing homelessness in a city like Indianapolis. Last year, it was 1,588 individuals. With that in mind, what sort of trends are we seeing in the homeless population without knowing the numbers right now? I know anecdotally I've heard that, you know, regionally people might come to a city like Indianapolis during a difficult time like a pandemic.
Sure. And Jill, I want to mention, we just wrapped up our 2021 point in time count last Friday. So, you know, we had to pivot that as well. We typically rely on anywhere from, you know, 50 to 70 volunteers to participate in our annual point in time count, particularly in terms of going out with outreach teams to survey. We could not do that this year in a responsible way. And so we shifted the way in which we did the point in time count, and know it's going to look really different than previous years. We worked really closely with HUD on a new methodology this year and really relied on the expertise and skills of our professional blended street outreach teams to go out this year and make sure that we're still doing this count and connecting with folks so that we really understand how this year is going to look different from previous years. But anecdotally, what we're hearing from outreach teams and from our shelter partners around homelessness and who's experiencing homelessness is an increase in families this year and families who may have previously been in doubled up situations or couch surfing, but because of COVID, that's not as feasible. Networks may be more reluctant now to take in friends and family because of the pandemic and trying to really kind of remain safe. So we're seeing more families kind of showing up in crisis and in needing emergency shelter. We're also hearing from street outreach teams that they're seeing some new faces this year that they've not seen historically and really trying to better understand why that's happening. And again, I don't like to speculate. And so we'll continue to dive into that data as we get it. But again, what we're hearing is particularly for those who were living more in unstable housing. So again, couch surfing or doubled up, the pandemic has really made that harder for some folks. Mm-hmm. So, part of our effort here in Indianapolis is to really think through and figure out how we do more creative housing problem solving. So as Jennifer said, we can divert families and individuals from having to come into shelter and really rethinking the way in which we problem solve a little more upstream so that we don't see new faces and continue to see people coming into our system right now.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, what are you experiencing in Lafayette? I mean, are you seeing new faces?
We actually see new faces every single day. In a community of our size, last year we served over 1,600 different people through our coordinated entry system. And again, I mentioned that we prioritize people that are really the most vulnerable. And we also prioritize those that are chronically experiencing homelessness, meaning that these are folks that have been homeless for at least a year, or they've had a couple times in the last couple of years, they popped into homelessness. So we really focus some of our resources on helping those that are chronically homeless, which means then that once we're kind of helping those folks, that we see a lot of new influx that's flowing into our system. We've actually seen from last year to this year a decrease in about 15% of the people that are coming into our system. And I will say a couple things. One of them is that, Chelsea's right on one hand that, when you're living in a doubled up situation in the middle of a pandemic, some people are just not okay with that. Like, that's just not okay. But on the other hand, we've seen that there's been a lot of times families are allowing their friends and family to stay with them because there is no other housing available. And so that's been kind of a blessing. Mm-hmm. And of course, and through this whole time, we've been under an eviction moratorium. And so people that are unable to pay their rent, they have not lost their housing due to that, which of course is the number one reason why most people get evicted, mm-hmm. is because they're not able to pay their rent. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that all evictions end up in homelessness, but there are some that because of their eviction, they don't have another housing solution. So we really feel like that eviction moratorium has helped kind of sustain those folks and kept them out of the system. But I will say that there are times when that eviction moratorium has been on the bubble, the calendar, so to speak, that us in the homeless system, delivery system, we get real nervous about that, because when mm-hmm. all the resources stop and the assistance stops and the eviction moratorium ends, we are really, really afraid we're going to have a tsunami of people entering our system that's already full. Like, we're already over capacity. We already don't have housing solutions for people. So anything we can do really federally is what we're really looking at. We need to be doing in order to make sure people are able to sustain their housing.
And I know that eviction moratorium cliff there is a major concern. That's interesting that, yeah. it seems to have really helped for the time being. It's other things that we expected during the pandemic, like to see outbreaks. I've heard that we necessarily haven't seen the COVID-19 outbreaks in communities. Have we here in Indianapolis, Chelsea?
Outbreaks in terms of those experiencing homelessness?
No, in terms of COVID.
Right, right, right. But within the population,
yes,
people.
Yes.
You know, I'll say, Jill, not to the extent that I think we were all worried about and preparing for. And I would really attribute that to the really fast action and coordination that we had with our local health department here. I cannot give enough kudos to the Marion County Health Department team that has been working with us since mid-March. I mean, we really activated pretty quickly, and there was a committed team here in Marion County that we started meeting with every single day to say, how do we make sure we don't see the kinds of outbreaks that we were being warned about and anticipating among those experiencing homelessness? And I will really say it was that coordinated effort and response with the Marion County Health Department, I think, that really kind of prevented us seeing the kinds of dramatic outbreaks that maybe other cities saw and that we were hearing about. The Marion County Health Department, again, in coordination with our shelter partners and outreach teams, were really trying to make sure not only resources and information were getting into shelters, but they were meeting people where they are. They were going into shelters. We quickly created and adopted a community-wide screening process and testing protocol that all of our partners really embraced and started using pretty early on. So there was some pretty quick action and coordination that happened here in Indianapolis to prevent the kind of outbreaks that I know other cities experience.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, have you experienced that sort of, you know, really solid collaborative effort between organizations there in your neck of the woods?
You know, Jill, I will say exactly what Chelsea said. Like, I've really never seen the collaboration as much as I've seen with COVID. Quite frankly, and we're a community that we do a great job of collaborating. But once COVID came into play and our local health department, they were already partners with us. They were already on site doing services, direct healthcare partnerships with people experiencing homelessness. But once guidance started coming down the pipe again around COVID and our very vulnerable group of people experiencing homelessness. And so we started learning about those best practices nationally and what do we do and how do we do it. Immediately, those protocols and procedures started going into play. And I'll actually remember one time, probably towards the end of March, when, you know, we really realized that we as staff are all very connected to the media in order to find out what was going on. And many of our folks who are experiencing homelessness are not. And so they really were very disconnected about COVID. They didn't really understand what it was or believe what it was or have, you know, they just kind of thought it was just, oh, whatever, we're fine, everything's fine. And so our local health department actually came over one time and sort of had a come to Jesus kind of a meeting with everybody just to make sure that people understood the seriousness of what we were talking about. And, you know, while we were putting in all of these different protocols and safety guidelines and mandating mask wearing. And I mean, it was a huge change on how we were doing business. And so that partnership of having the health department on site was critical. Now, I will say towards the end of 2020 and into 21, that's when we here really started to see what I'm going to call an outbreak. It was so much so that we had enough people who were testing positive that because of their close proximity to others, that then established the social distancing was a problem. Like we were kind of spreading through our folks. And so while we have not seen the deaths that were on the radar initially, because we really understand that many of our people do have chronic health challenges already. And so it just put them more at risk. And so when we saw all of that and we saw this coming through the winter, we actually made an unfortunate choice, but to close our doors to any new guests, anybody who was new to experiencing homelessness, that we needed to really come up with a different solution for them in order to be safe and have a place to go. Don't come in here. We were kind of the hot zone. Mm. And so we had community partners that responded literally within 5 days. I mean, it was one of those things that I've never seen anything like it, where we had partnerships of people saying, yes, we'll open up another shelter. We'll call it an annex when the emergency shelter or the date when we have to close down, then we will provide a location for people to get meals and food. How are we going to staff it? How are we going to serve? And that's actually been running on and off when we have these timeframes and quarantine timeframes kicking up. So it turns on and off. And that's been through since last week. I think it was still on. So it's just been amazing to see people do care about people who are experiencing homelessness because it's not okay. Mm-hmm. And so they will respond to that.
That's great to hear, and something, you know, yeah, that I have been hearing, that, you know, just the communication and the collaboration and people stepping up in so many different communities has really made a difference. Well, we will be back after a quick break. We're talking today about efforts to reach Hoosiers experiencing homelessness. If you have questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail, 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. Or send us a voice message without making a call by using our smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. Free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. I'm Jill Sheridan. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. All In. I'm Jill Sheridan. Back now to our discussion on homelessness during the winter and during the pandemic in Indiana. As always, we'd love to hear your questions or comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from, 866-476-3881. And joined again by two guests, Chelsea Herring-Cozy, Executive Director of Coalition for Homelessness Intervention and Prevention, or CHIP, and Jennifer Layton, President and CEO of LTHC Homeless Services in Lafayette. You both have mentioned the housing first efforts that you are engaged in. You know, this is important work when we're looking to, like you mentioned, move away from the shelter model that we've always relied on. You know, rapid rehousing, permanent supportive housing. Chelsea, I'll start with you. You know, what does this really look like, and why is this a important part of the solution?
Well, it's an important part of the solution because the solution to homelessness is housing. I think when we talk about homelessness, it often kind of conflates a lot of issues into one thing. And homelessness is really about people who are in a housing crisis. And there's no kind of one reason that happens, but the common factor is a housing crisis, the loss of housing. And the best way to solve homelessness is through housing solutions and permanent housing solutions. What's really important is that our goal is not necessarily to say people are not going to experience a housing crisis. We want housing crisis to be much fewer and far between than it is currently. But to then be able to quickly respond to that housing crisis with a housing solution. And to really look at the role of shelters in communities as a pathway, a place to quickly land and safely land in the midst of that housing crisis, and as just as quickly exit shelter. Really having shelters serve as pathways to housing and not destinations in and of themselves. So, you know, what's really important about a housing first approach and continuing to focus on housing as a solution to homelessness is it does move us away from managing homelessness to really solving it and ending it mm-hmm. for more people. And what that really means, Jill, and when we talk about housing first, is we focus on housing first, stabilizing somebody's housing, and then really working through some of the other challenges or issues folks may be facing for that longer term stability, and not kind of the historic or maybe more conventional models that had been adopted in years past, which is, well, in order to get to housing, you've got to do X, Y, and Z first. You've got to get sober. You've got to get a job. You've got to address your mental health issues. And then we can talk about housing. Housing first and really focusing on housing as a permanent solution, it flips that upside down and says, no, in order for anyone to stabilize anything, we've got to stabilize housing first. Mm-hmm. We've got to get people into permanent housing based on what their needs are, based on what their challenges are. It's without condition. It's without judgment. And so how do we make housing the first priority? And then once in housing, working with folks to improve income, improve employment, get connected to healthcare resources, all of those things are much easier to address and stabilize once the housing crisis is solved for. Mm-hmm. And that is our focus. And that really requires continuing to keep our eyes on housing and bringing more housing to bear in our housing market, making it truly affordable. Mm-hmm. And working closely with landlord partners on addressing the barriers to getting into housing for folks. Mm-hmm. We need more low barrier options. And we need, honestly, landlords to be part of the solution with us and to make sure housing is accessible to those who really need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned we have some unique challenges here in Indianapolis when it comes to housing, affordable housing shortage, you know, tenants' rights. What barriers, Jennifer, are you experiencing when it comes to really making housing first a priority?
You know, I'll echo everything that Chelsea just said, but about housing first, because it really is a change in the antiquated way that we used to do housing resources. This is really about focusing on, let's get people into housing, let's end their crisis and traumatic event of going through experiencing homelessness, mm-hmm. and then really focus on the services that can keep them in that housing. And so the barriers to that, like a huge one, is really the lack of financial resources, because housing is expensive. And so while we appreciate the fact that where there is some housing available, there's not enough housing available to low to no income folks, because we're not looking at income. We're really looking at stabilizing someone. And this doesn't mean that we're just paying rent for you know, first month's rent and deposit and walking away. We need to keep people in that housing. And so it's a really long-term investment. And we simply don't have the financial resources to keep up with the demand that we have just here in Tippecanoe County. So I can't even think about Marion County. But I will say the entire state of Indiana, we operate under what's called a continuum of care. So there's 16 regions in the state, and we all operate under the philosophy of housing first when we're doing coordinated entry. It is something that we focus on. We really do prioritize people that are not only experiencing homelessness, but coupled with some of those challenges to those housing stability. This is no judgment. This is let's end their homelessness, end their housing crisis, get them into housing.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned on how we're sort of flipping the whole philosophy of how we're helping people in recent years. And I know Indianapolis a number of years ago passed a homeless bill of rights, and I know other communities are considering such matters. Has this been helpful here in Indianapolis, Chelsea? What do you say?
Well, I think, you know, Jill, it goes back to, I think, the premise of it is not a crime to be homeless. Homelessness is not a crime. It is not a criminal activity. And we want to make sure that those experiencing homelessness are afforded the same rights and treated with the same dignity that anyone else would be. And so I think, you know, when I talk about we talk about homeless bill of rights, you know, it's really making sure, again, those that are in crisis and living unhoused are being afforded those same rights as everyone else to move freely about the community, and to make sure that we are not kind of criminalizing those who are living unhoused, but really focusing on the solutions. And so I think that's the spirit in which these things, I think, come from. How do we make sure that we're not just talking about displacing people or moving people around, but that we are really focused on treating folks with dignity and respect, protecting folks' rights, but all with the goal of really understanding the crisis that people are in and solving for that. And so I think it helps just frame some of the questions that we should be making sure we're answering as we look at the issue of homelessness.
Mm-hmm. Does Lafayette have any type of ordinance like that, Jennifer?
We don't actually have a specific ordinance, but what we do have is collaborations from key partners in leadership. So I will say between our county commissioners and both the Lafayette and West Lafayette mayors, they are all on the same page about understanding that people who are experiencing homelessness need our help and they need housing. And so we in our community back in 2012, we created a pretty robust strategic plan of different ways we could do business better in order to really focus on ending homelessness. And so we had a lot of buy-in at that time, a lot of great community conversation about what that could look like. But I will say, though, that we do continue to have those conversations just about the challenges and needs of people that are experiencing homelessness and what they have, because not everybody understands. And so that continues to be part of our work, is to really educate the community as to these really are human beings and they deserve a place to be and a place to stay. And it is not a criminal activity to not have housing.
Mm-hmm. Chelsea, I know that youth homelessness efforts have really been a focus here in Indianapolis. Can you tell us, you know, why some of the support's really been coming that way lately?
In terms of you said youth homelessness, Jill?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jennifer mentioned this earlier on, is the need to really understand various populations that are experiencing homelessness, and young people show up differently in terms of their experience with homelessness and have much higher, I think, vulnerability when we look at access to resources and safe places to come in, specifically when we're talking about LGBTQ youth. Who, you know, are experiencing homelessness oftentimes because of really heartbreaking family dynamics. And so, you know, here in Indianapolis, we've really been fortunate to have some phenomenal youth organizations working with young people to really elevate the issue of youth homelessness and to try to break these cycles much earlier on and much more upstream. And that becomes really vital, Jill, because it's such a pivotal time in people's lives when you're young and experiencing homelessness, to try to end that as quickly as possible and get youth connected to networks and support systems and employment opportunities, educational opportunities, so that young people don't become those that are experiencing chronic homelessness years down the road. You know, one of the best predictors of homelessness is a previous experience with homelessness. Mm-hmm. And so working again more upstream and with young people to break that cycle early on, that's a huge need and something that we're really focusing on here in Indianapolis and finally have resources to bring to bear to do that work.
Yeah.
And so that's been a huge focus and will continue to be a focus of how do we engage young people quicker, earlier, to break those cycles and get young people connected before they kind of continue that path of housing crisis and instability, and to do it in a way that is so trauma-informed and affirming of positive youth development. And what I'm most excited about, Jill, is that young people are coming along and informing this work. That's been huge. Young people are the ones saying, here's what we need. Here's what we're facing. Here are the kinds of interventions that are going to work for us. And we want to be part of the decision-making process and planning and evaluation of these interventions. So we've got a very robust youth action board here in Indianapolis that is walking alongside all of this, informing that work.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Really getting the people impacted involved. Is youth homelessness an effort that you're focused on in Lafayette, Jennifer?
We absolutely are. And throughout the state of Indiana, one of the great new projects that have kind of come out of 2020 is a partnership really with the Department of Child Services, focusing on youth who have aged out of foster care. That's one of those, one of those pivotal points that we can look at that shows that housing instability really could continue for those folks. And what we've learned is that when you partner some of these systems together, you will see the overlap of the data. Well, you'll see homelessness and housing instability, and they need a housing intervention coupled with the Department of Child Services. So we've been very fortunate. I think there's three locations right now, and Lafayette is one of those communities that's piloting this program, but to really focus on these youth who have aged out of foster care and provide them with a housing subsidy, which provides for, housing stability, and then also couple that with some case management support from the Department of Child Services to keep these kids in housing, learning some life skills, really, really working on focusing, getting people back on the path to success. Because, again, as Chelsea mentioned, when we're looking at that age group, that 18 to 24-year-old age group, that's a really big point in their life that they can sink or swim. And so the more that we can help people really, really come with us, partner with us, help us get you connected, because there are some great resources. But housing is the key. And housing, again, is expensive. And so until we have that housing subsidy that they could qualify for, these kids don't make a prioritized list. They're not coming up on the radar because they're not chronically homeless and challenged with all the things we're looking at. So many times, until we have a specific intervention that is tailored to meet their needs, they're falling off the radar and doing things that probably shouldn't actually be happening to these youth. So yeah, it is a targeted group of people that we continue to focus on.
Mm-hmm. And when we do reach youth first, then, you know, it's the ultimate prevention if we're able to help young people. You know, Chelsea, what else can we do on that front moving forward preventatively to work on this issue together?
Yeah, so, you know, as I think Jennifer mentioned and I mentioned, we've got to work a little more upstream too. So that looks like more focus on what Jennifer described earlier, diversion. So when a household has lost housing but has not yet stepped into that shelter system or spent a night in their car, how do we make sure as a community we are working with those households to do some creative housing problem solving and to prevent them from coming into a homeless response system? Because, you know, let's be honest, once you are in a homeless response system, it is hard to navigate sometimes, and there are not enough resources for everyone. So we want to divert more people and work more upstream before people spend a night in shelter or on the streets or in a car. The second part of that is, you know, working more collaboratively with our community centers who are doing that kind of prevention work, before a housing crisis happens, before a household loses housing, maybe there is an eviction pending. How do we make sure there is a coordinated response to do everything possible to keep that household from becoming homeless? As Jennifer mentioned, you know, eviction isn't a linear path to homelessness, but we know it's a contributing factor. And so we have got to address the eviction crisis that Indiana already had prior to COVID, and to make sure that we have legal resources available to those who may be facing a loss of housing, and that we have resources that are being coordinated to try to keep people or rehouse people before that housing is actually lost. So part of that, Jill, is advocacy. There's a ton happening at the State House right now. People need to follow and track what legislation is being proposed to help strengthen tenant rights and tenant protections and to support legal interventions to keep people from completely losing housing.
Yeah, and a whole nother huge issue, Indiana, with one of the highest eviction rates in the whole country. So we will be looking at the State House. We will be seeing what you two are doing on the front, helping Hoosiers experiencing homelessness. So I just want to say thank you both for taking time today.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill. And thanks, Jennifer.
Yeah, Chelsea Herring-Cozy, Executive Director, Coalition for Homelessness Intervention and Prevention, or CHIP, and Jennifer Layton, President and CEO of LTHC Homeless Services. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us tomorrow for a discussion involving an Indiana woman who was involved with ISIS. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Jill Sheridan. Thanks for listening. This is All In Indiana.